Hello and welcome to No Rest for the Week, and the show where we go behind the scenes and talk to the creators of independent film and series. I'm Jason Godby, and with me in the Rabbit Hole studio today is an accomplished writer, director, producer, Mr. Jeremiah Kipp. Welcome, Jeremiah.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
Thanks for coming. We appreciate it when people make the schlep to Brooklyn and come to the studio. So thanks for coming. I really wanted to kind of jump right into it because there's a lot of stuff to cover with you because you've had an extensive background. You've been doing this for a number of years.
That's true.
So tell me, what is your origin story? How did you get started? How did you get on this journey of filmmaking?
Well, I guess it all started when I was 12. I grew up with my grandparents in Rhode Island, and they got a VHS camcorder, and I think the intention was that they would use it to film weddings and family picnics and things like that. But I hijacked it and said, all right, Granddad, you're going to be the mad scientist, and we'll film a movie down the basement where you're going to travel to the fifth dimension. Then the following week, I went to all my friends at school and was like, hey, bring your army jackets. We're going to run around the woods and do a war movie, and the week after that would be like, you guys are going to be zombies attacking the house, and so on. So I did like 300 of those movies when I was in high school to various levels of ambition. Like, we did a three-hour adaptation of Stephen King's The Stand, which was a crazy endeavor, but we loved it. You know, we had a great time doing it. And I knew pretty much immediately once we started shooting that this was what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. So in high school, I had a great art teacher named Mrs. Callahan, and she helped me get different like art grants and art scholarships, and I was able to go to NYU, New York University, because after all, Scorsese had gone there, so, you know, it'd be good company to keep. But I moved to New York in 1992 and fell in love with the city. I loved going to film school. It was during the 90s when indie film was really happening here. So you had guys like Jim Jarmusch and Abel Ferrara and Spike Lee and Hal Hartley and Michael Almereyda all running around and making independent films, which was really inspiring. And
there was a big, it was a huge 90s movement that that happened. That was kind of like the big revolution. Before the digital revolution, that was the original indie revolution.
It felt that way at the time, for sure. You know, the hard part about making movies back then was that everything was shot on film. So just affording film stock was the never-ending nightmare. But if you had Christopher Walken in your movie, then you could probably get it distributed. You know, it was a different time.
Right.
So I kind of was coming of age during that time, and then it ended. So I kind of came like right after that indie film 1990s boom and landed really right when the digital boom happened, you know, and that's really, I owe my entire career to that boom, which happened afterwards.
You made a number of shorts, and you're still making shorts.
I am.
And then at some point, around what year did you make your first feature?
2010. Was when I made my first feature, which was many years after film
school. Talk to me about that experience and like the challenges of going from, you know, making indie shorts and then, you know, kind of tackling the first film.
Well, you know, I remember in 2009 I got mugged, and I've been in New York for almost 20 years, so I figured, well, I guess it was time to get mugged. But I went home all beaten up and was looking at the ceiling, and I said to myself, you know, I'm going to make a feature film this year. Somehow or other, it's going to happen. And within 2 months, these guys in Connecticut had found me, and they said, we've got this Killer in the Woods movie, and would you like to direct it? Because they'd seen a short film I'd made called Contact, and that had been playing a lot of festivals, and it had kind of caught on the blogosphere, so a lot of people were writing about it. So they'd seen Contact and said that was probably the right fit for their slasher movie. And I was game on for it because I'd assistant directed a number of feature films from 2005 to 2009. I must have AD'd, I don't know, 20 feature films or something. So I knew what it was like to be on a feature film set. I'd had a lot of experience, you know, working on a feature film. So I knew what it was like to spend 18 or 20 days working on an indie feature. Directing it, you know, it was a low budget. It was under $500,000. And the script was atrocious, but it was an opportunity, you know. It's like nobody else was saying to me, hey, do you want to direct a feature film? Like the you know, nobody, there were no offers. But I love horror. I've always loved genre films. I used to write for Fangoria magazine. And I loved the idea of running around in the woods with Dominic Civilli, who had shot a number of my shorts. He was my director of photography. We brought out a crew from New York that were all friends of ours. And the name actor was Tom Savini, who did the special effects for movies like Friday the 13th and Creepshow.
I was just going to say, I know Tom Savini as a makeup artist.
Yeah.
And he's been in a couple of films.
He has, yeah. He acted in Dawn of the Dead, the 1970s version.
He was also in Dusk Till Dawn,
Dawn, he played a character named Sex Machine. And he's more recently he's been in a couple of Quentin Tarantino movies,
right.
And he was in Machete with Danny Trejo.
Right. So those guys love him.
Around. Oh yeah, they love him. He's a B movie horror icon.
And the film, how long did it wind up taking? How long did you shoot for, and how long did it take to complete?
Yeah, I guess it was like 2.5 weeks to shoot the feature.
Wow.
So we all went up to Connecticut. We stayed in a big house. We were running around the woods with cameras. Tom showed up near the end of the shoot. And he was really interesting because he showed up and immediately, at first, was prepared to direct the movie for us. So he walked onto the set and was like, put the camera over here. But the director of photography and I were very prepared. We said we knew that he might try to boss us around because he has a terrible reputation in the convention circuit of being a really difficult man. So we were like, we got to get him on our side right away. So we cut together a little reel. Like the 2 or 3 best minutes of the movie. And we're like, yes, Tom, yes, we'll figure out where to put the camera. But first, you need to go to hair makeup. And why don't you watch this 3-minute reel that we cut together so you understand what we're doing here? And he watched it. And immediately he was like, oh, okay. Great. I see what's going on here. I trust you guys. I'm going to go to makeup. And from then, he was very protective of us. He was incredibly
helpful.
Because
you kind of showed him your credibility in being able to make the movie.
That's right.
So, you know, I always ask people, you know, if you could go back in time and if you now could go back to you then and give yourself advice, like what advice would you give yourself?
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like, you know, you had already been on film sets. This wasn't your first rodeo.
No.
Even though it was your first feature, it was definitely not the first, you know, big experience because you had all this other experience.
Yeah.
But is there anything that you would tell yourself if you went back?
Well, I think I would tell myself something before making my first feature, which was in 2003, I made a short called The Christmas Party, and it did really well. It played at least 100 film festivals, and it got me some attention. It got me work. You know, it got me jobs directing commercials for Canon. But I know that there were people asking me, do you have a script for a feature that you would like to do? And I didn't have one tucked under my arm. You know, which was really naive of me. So immediately I started writing stuff, but yeah, I'm a slow writer. It took me like 3 years to write something. And by the time I'd written it, you know, the opportunities had expired. So I'm in a different situation now where I've, you know, it's like I'm traveling around with a short called Slapface, but it's a proof of concept for a feature. And it is one of those things that's getting me through doors. And I'm taking a lot of meetings about it right now. But I wish that I had done that back in 2003, 2004. I wish that I had taken the time to, you know, whether it's like go sign up for a writing class and like make that the, you know, the thing where you're like, you know, forced to write a feature length script or something. I would have done that differently. So I'd be in a position to pitch or present something when I had something that was like hot on the market.
It's so funny. That has become a reoccurring theme on this show is when I talk to people, I say, you know, what would you do differently?
Yeah.
And everybody is like, you know, I wish I had the resume that I have now 20 years ago. I wish I had done more. Don't wait. You know,
never wait.
You know, make your own thing, even if you don't have a lot of dough to make it, just because having something is so much better than having nothing. And, you know, that's what I started doing right away. I was making shorts and web series and stuff like that, and I had no money to do it. But I was like, no one's going to ever hire me ever if I've never done anything.
For sure.
You know.
And if somebody presents you an opportunity, you should go for it. I remember that there was another feature-length script that was offered to me, you know, right after I'd done that film, The Christmas Party, that was successful. But I didn't like the script then. I was like, this is a sci-fi thing, but the script is kind of rubbish, and I don't know if I want to do it. And I probably should have taken it, because once you do a feature, then nobody wonders if you can do a feature anymore, you know, and then they'll allow you to do another feature. You know, it's like if you're going for your second feature, you're in a way better position than you were doing your first feature. And I've done 5 features at this point, you know, but that first one, nobody would have given me the second one or the third one or the fourth one if I hadn't done the first one.
Right. Yeah. Even if, you know, and, you know, when I was talking to, when I had Richard LeMay here, mm-hmm. he was talking about doing, you know, his early films, and he just started shooting features right away, mm-hmm. which I thought was insane. You know, he was like, I was financing these things, I was producing, I was even like DPing, I was doing the wardrobe. But, you know, by the time he had gotten offered a, like a real feature with a budget, he had already done like three of them,
right.
you know, and there was no, nobody was wondering, hey, can you do this? I think it's a huge difference. I think, you know, there's a lot of us that don't get a chance to make feature films right away. But if you can, hop on the, just say yes. There's so many people. Like, if you look at a guy like David Fincher,
sure.
who some people accuse of, like, sort of ruining the Alien series by three. So a lot of people have a lot of... I'm not a huge Alien fan. I like the first one. I haven't seen a lot of the sequels. But, you know, he took that movie because he was basically doing commercials and music videos. And, you know, I guess he was the young kid they thought they could push around. But he did it. But it wasn't like that ruined his career. That started his career.
No, I mean, and he learned a lot of lessons on that, too.
Like, I'm sure
he
did.
Big lesson, you know, one of them was, you know, make sure the script is finished when you go out and shoot the movie, because they were still writing a lot while they were doing
it. Always a good idea.
Which is really hard. I mean, I've done, you know, that was one of my features was like that, where it kept getting rewritten and rewritten. And that's very stressful. You know, it's like it creates a situation where you're not quite sure what the next corner is going to be. Now, weirdly, that movie is called Black Wake, and it got a lot of good press, where people are writing about it saying, like, wow, this movie is so bonkers and bizarre, and you can't predict what's around the next corner. And when I watch the movie, all I can see are the rewrites. But what they're seeing is entirely different than what I'm seeing, which is they're seeing something where it's a mind-bending head trip of an experience, you know? And I feel like saying to them, you know, no, guys, it's just that it was getting rewritten all the time. But instead I say, oh, thank you very much. That's exactly what we
planned. Right, it's what we were looking for, absolutely. Whenever given credit, just go run with it.
Yeah.
Just, you know, say, yes, we
for
meant
sure.
it to do exactly that. So I wanted to get into the nitty-gritty, because you're one of the more experienced directors that I've had on the show. And, you know, this show is all about, you know, helping people, giving people, it's highlighting independent film and independent series, but it's also helping anyone who's like sort of trying to break into the industry or trying to, you know, sort of level up in the industry, if I may use such a millennial term. But I would say, you know, for you, like, you've sort of, you've been around for a while and you've done this, you know, going on, how many years are you doing this now?
Well, it depends on when you start.
Right.
And how it's like full-time freelancing since 2004. Or 2005.
So, you know, you've got almost 15 years under your belt. And, you know, so I wanted to just kind of talk to you about your approach to projects. And you see, you've worked with a lot of you've worked with some name actors.
I have.
You've also worked with kids, which I don't know if I'd, you know, I want to tackle that anytime soon myself. A lot of people say stay away from animals and kids.
Well, I don't know. I was a child actor myself when I was a kid, so I wasn't afraid of it. I knew some of the tricks of working with children. And I think a lot of the problems get solved during the audition, where you meet the kid, you play games of make-believe with them, and you really see how versatile their imagination is. And also, you're auditioning their parents. You're auditioning their parents because you want to find out if they're stage parents, if they're easy to work with, if they're cool, if they're going to pressure the child. Because most of the time, when the parents are open-minded and progressive and smart and are generally about their kid having an interesting experience, then most of the time it's been very rewarding. And if they're very controlling stage parents, then it's a nightmare. But I've had many, many, many good experiences. As long as you vet them really clearly in advance, then you should have. I mean, there's always the unpredictable element of a kid who eats too much candy and suddenly doesn't want to work anymore. But most of the time, if you create an environment that feels like you're just playing make-believe and it's less of a movie where there's pressure to be great, then the kid will just pretend and be really, really remarkable. But I do the same thing with grown-up actors, too. You know, you make phone calls and you ask what actors I like to work with, including name actors. Like Tom Sizemore is a great actor, but he's got a history of drug abuse and problems. And, you know, there were many a story about what a nightmare he is, and I believe all of it. But I did, once we knew who was going to be in Black Wake, I made some phone calls. And directors who had worked with him more recently said that he comes to set very prepared and ready to play, and he's got a sense of adventure, and he's a good guy. And that was the Tom Sizemore that I met. So he wasn't at all a nightmare, I'm happy to report. He was really
He is a
there.
Wonderful actor.
Great.
I mean,
so great.
If you see him in, you know, he's like in Saving Private Ryan.
He's brilliant
in
that.
He's in so many good movies, yeah. And I would love to see him more.
Yeah, I think he's due for a comeback, and Hollywood can be a very forgiving place. So
yeah, I mean, if Mel Gibson can come back, Tom Sizemore can come back.
Well, he was just in Twin Peaks with David Lynch, so he's, you know, opportunities are presenting themselves. And he deserves it. He's a really talented man.
Talk to me about, like, your approach to, like you said, you kind of work with actors the same way you work with kids. Mm-hmm. Would you consider yourself being an actor's director?
Well, I love actors. I love working with them. I believe that, you know, you want to collaborate and you want to make them part of the process. And if you do that and you earn their trust and you trust them, then you can go further. You can explore more. You can discover things. And I like that. You know, I like the feeling of us all robbing that bank together, you know?
I feel like a lot of, especially beginning directors, there's mm-hmm. that director insecurity where you feel like if there's any good ideas, they all have to be yours,
nah.
You know, and nah. that, and if you can let go of that and mm-hmm. and let the actor bring what they bring, because that's where you're hiring them.
For sure.
You know, you're not hiring them to, like, puppet your words back to you.
No, that would be a mistake.
And, you know, let them try it. Even if mm-hmm. it sounds like a bad idea, that's mm-hmm. it's just say yes and see. If it's a bad idea, it'll self-destruct, but let them do it.
You're also doing takes, you know. It's right. You're doing multiple takes. So I always give the actor the first take. I'll say, show me, you know. And
right.
And then I'll give them different verbs to play or different images and, you know, different things. And then the last take, I usually say, all right, let's do one more for fun. And I often leave that up to them as well, you know. It's like, let's just show me what you want to do. And then we have options in the editing room, and I'm very happy to be wrong. I mean, you know, it's if the actor presents something on take one and then I totally derailed them on take two, three, four, and five, take one still exists, you know. It's like we have that, you know. So, so I think it's valuable to listen to your colleagues and absorb from them and share, you know. And you're all in it together at the same time.
Yeah, I think it's the collaborative nature, and I think you do get good ideas from people when you let them. And that goes with every position.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
You know, you're not telling your focus puller what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, you've got a good relationship with your DP that's mm-hmm. Symbiotic, and they're not trying to direct the movie, and you're mm-hmm. not trying to operate the camera. And you've also done something which I think a lot of directors find daunting or intimidating, which is you've done some action work.
I have, yeah.
And I always, like, to me, it's like I've done a little bit of it, but mm-hmm. it's always like, how do I cover this? How do I make it look good? How do I make it look real? Mm-hmm. Especially with, like, fight scenes and things like that. What was your approach to that when you first started doing it?
Well, I guess the start of it is, what is the action scene about? You know, because, like, it's the same thing as an actor playing an intention. Like, what is the fight choreography about? That's, like, the first thing. So it's like, what's the drama of the scene? What do the characters want? How are they trying to get it? And then how they fight is character also. So that's the beginning. It's like, what is the objective of the fight? And how are they trying to achieve that objective? Then the second thing is technical. It's like figuring out where to place the camera, because it's not a real fight. It's a fake fight, you know? So, like, they can be swinging at each other safely, because safety has to come first, you know. It's I mean, that should be true for every artistic endeavor. Safety first and then everything else. So when you're doing action and stunt work, you always do it very slowly at first. You do it like half speed or quarter speed, or, you know, like we did a Hong Kong action movie in January of last year, and we spent like 2.5 weeks rehearsing some of the fight scenes. And it was in slow motion at first. It was as if they were fighting underwater, because you were just like figuring out what all the moves were going to be. And then as we went on, we would go faster and faster until it was muscle memory and they could do all these things. But if I was swinging at you in the two shot right now and I did this, you know,
let me give you a two shot right now.
Like if I did this and in the two shot, it looks like there's a lot of air between us.
Right.
But if the camera were behind your head, you know, and I swung, it would look like I was making contact with you.
I think a lot of people, like especially American action directors, the fights are cut almost too quick now.
Yeah.
It's like there's tons of shaky cam. It's shot from a billion different angles,
right.
And like sort of puzzled together, and it,
yeah, it's a problem.
It, and that's become the style of action, mm-hmm. like the shaky cam sort of yeah. style. And
there's no art to it, though. You know, it's yeah. like it's the audience always needs to understand the geography of what's going on. You know, they need to understand the spatial relationships between the characters. It's something that's so brilliant in Die Hard, for instance. It's like the camera always understands the spatial relationships between the characters. You always know where John McClane is. You always know where the bad guys are. And it's really important. Because
that's what makes McTiernan
that,
a genius. Because
yeah,
McTiernan
is brilliant.
He knew that. And also, not just that, but like you said before, mm-hmm. understanding the drama of the scene.
Exactly.
What it's is the scene thing. About? Because mm-hmm. you do see some movies that just feel like they're sort of... here's some talky bits, and then there's action bits, and here's mm-hmm. some, and they don't relate to one another, not right. character motivated. Or you see something that's so over choreographed mm-hmm. that it just looks like a dance,
right?
And there's no meaning to it. It doesn't look like anybody's actually getting hurt,
right? That's the performance aspect of it, where
right.
it's like it's great if the stunt people are also actors, and many of them are now, you know, because many stunt people like. They take acting classes now, so
and many actors do their
muscles.
Own stunts now too.
It happens too.
So
yeah.
there's a lot of crossover. I mean,
yeah,
I don't
wonderful.
Recommend anyone be Tom Cruise and hang yourself off a building or jump motorcycles or whatever. Mm-hmm. But there is something to that where you mm-hmm. see that and you're like, oh my God, that's really him,
right?
You know. So talk to me about because you've got several upcoming projects. You're
yeah.
very prolific doing this stuff.
I love to work.
Yes, you do. Yeah, you can. Your IMDb page reflects that. Mm-hmm. Tell me about the upcoming projects that you got coming on, that you got coming out.
Well, let's see. Black Wake, which was my third feature, just signed its distribution deal. We can announce that. We're announcing it in August. You know, we can't. We were told not. We signed the contract, but we're not allowed to say because the distributor is changing the poster art. So once that's done, then we can announce to everybody like what that's going to be. There's a short called Slapface, which is an 8-minute proof of concept monster movie that's been playing a lot of festivals. Pickup, written by Jessica Blank, who's a great New York playwright, has been playing a bunch of festivals. It's still in the middle of its run. There's a short called Fizzle, which is a comedy, which is very different than the dark horror and action stuff that I do. But ever since I did this TV pilot called Mommy Mafia for a great actress writer named Laura Sweeney, things have been leaning into the comedy direction. It's funny because like once you have success in one area, then a bunch of offers come in that area. So Mommy Mafia led to a bunch of comedy offers, strangely enough.
Comedy is hard.
It is. It's very different. Comedy
is hard, and if you can do it, you can do anything.
Yeah.
And it's like what you were talking about action before. Mm-hmm. That's another thing that's also difficult. I've also seen in physical comedy, mm-hmm. you have to all the same rules apply.
Absolutely.
Just because the stunt is funny and mm-hmm. not dramatic doesn't mm-hmm. mean nobody can get hurt.
Right.
So, and you hear about people losing their lives literally in action comedies and stuff.
Oh yeah, it's horrific to hear about.
So I think if you can do action, you can do comedy. You do just about anything.
Yeah. Well, the comedy stuff is interesting because if you're trying to be funny, it's almost never funny. You know, it's like the great comedy work that I've done in any way. It's always like if the performers are being very truthful and honest in their work and playing the character and playing the intentions, then the comedy will come. It's kind of that Jack Lemmon approach to comedy where it's like, stop, don't try to be funny. You know, it's like one of the best directions I ever gave to anybody was like we were doing take after take, and I just said to him like, "Stop trying to be funny," you know, and then he just played it truthfully and honestly. And then when we screened that for the audience laughed really hard, and the actor happened to be with me, and he was like, "Oh, of course, you know, serve the story, serve the character."
Mike Nichols, when he was making Birdcage, mm-hmm. his attitude was, "Well, we can always get laughs
for sure."
And nobody says that mm-hmm. on a, you know, it's all about the laughs,
right.
You know, but if you've got Nathan Lane and you've got mm-hmm. Robin Williams, then yeah, you can always get laughs.
Oh, of course.
You know?
Yeah.
And do you have any other feature projects coming out at current?
Well, let's see. I mean, I don't know. I've been interviewing a lot with Slapface, you know, that's one where like time and again, I've been taking these meetings, talking about potentially getting that project going. So I'm in the middle of something right now where we're creating a lookbook for it. For a party who's really interested in making it. So we'll see. And there are a couple other offers that are on the table that are in various stages of financing. So we'll see what's next. I know the next thing that's directly for me is back to television. I'm doing a Discovery ID show called Grave Mysteries. It's in its second season. I got the first season of that off of a short film I made, Pickup, which I mentioned earlier. So that got me the job doing that TV show. And they renewed it. So back to work starting on the 30th of this month.
Fabulous, fabulous. Yeah. So thanks so much for coming. I got to wrap
pleasure.
Up. But Jeremiah Kipp, doing great stuff.
Yeah.
Tell us, where can people find you on the web and learn all about your projects?
Well, my website is kippfilms.com. That's K-I-P-P, two P's like Paul. films.com. And then, you know, if you look up my name on Facebook or Instagram, I'm very active on social media, not just about myself, but I post a lot of things that are going on in the industry. So I try to keep an active social media life.
Fabulous. So, and I will say thank you, and thank you for joining us. I'd like to thank my guest once again, Jeremiah Kipp. And just to let you know, you can find more episodes of this show, No Rest of the Weekend, on our website, btrp.nyc/podcast is where you'll find the episodes. You can also find us on iTunes and now Google Play, and also Anchor and Stitcher and all the places that you listen to podcasts. For Behind the Rabbit Productions, I'm Jason Godby, and we'll see you next time.